translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, O my Lord, O unconquerable one, O master of all potencies, please exhibit your internal potency to conquer the nescience of all moving and inert living entities. Due to nescience, they accept all kinds of faulty things, thus provoking a fearful situation. O Lord, please show your glories. You can do this very easily, for your internal potency is beyond the external potency, and you are the reservoir of all opulence. You are also the demonstrator of the material potency. You are also always engaged in your pastimes in the spiritual world, where you exhibit your reserved internal potency, and sometimes you exhibit the external potency by glancing over it. Thus, you manifest your pastimes. The Vedas confirm your two potencies and accept both types of pastimes due to them. Purport. This verse is taken from Srimad Bhagavatam 10.87.14. It is from the prayers of the Shruti Gana, the personified Vedas who glorify the Lord. The Almighty Personality of Godhead has three potencies, internal, external, and marginal. The conditioned souls who are condemned due to their forgetfulness of the Lord are put under the control of the external potency when she creates the material world. The three modes of material nature keep the living entity in a constant state of fear. Bhagam dvijita bini vesha sataha. The conditioned soul is always fearful due to being controlled by the external energy, external potency. Therefore, the conditioned soul should always pray to the Almighty Lord to conquer the external potency Maya, so that she will no longer manifest her powers, which bind all living entities, moving and inert. By praying in this way, one will become eligible to remain constantly in the association of the Lord, thus fulfilling the mission of going back home, back to Godhead. The translation once again, I'll just read it out because it's a long translation. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, O my Lord, O unconquerable one, O master of all potencies, please exhibit your internal potency to conquer the nescience of all moving and inert living entities. Due to nescience, they accept all kinds of faulty things, thus provoking a fearful situation. O Lord, please show your potency, please show your glories. You can do this very easily, for your internal potency is beyond the external potency. And you are the reservoir of all opulence. You are also the demonstrator of the material potency. You are also always engaged in your pastimes in the spiritual world, where you exhibit your reserved internal potency. And sometimes you exhibit the external potency by glancing over it. Thus you manifest your pastimes. The Vedas confirm your two potencies and accept both types of pastimes due to them. Jai Om Gyanati Midandasya Gyananjana Shilakaya Chakshuran Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastarya Bhutale Shri Mate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavari Vasyasate Satarine. Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nitananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinna Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vancha kalpa trubascha, kripa sindhu bhayavacha, patitanam bhavanebhyo, vaishnavebhyo, namo namaha. Vaishnavebhyo, namo namaha. Seeking the blessings and mercy of all the assembled and unassembled Vaishnava devotees of the Lord, so that I can say something meaningful this most auspicious morning. It is also the disappearance of three of our unique acharyas in the lineage. Two Goswamis, Gopal Bhatta Goswami, disappearance, and Raghunath Das Goswami. Sorry, Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, and Raghunath Das Goswami, and of course, the author, Sri Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. So three. And hence, we have an auspicious ceremony later on in the day, for we are going to be appointing a new head pujari of the temple. So do please be in the Haveli, 6 p.m. onwards. Tempting thing is that there is a nice feast of 7:30. The head pujari-to-be has selected the menu, so it's a nice menu. Prabhu's this 15th chapter, we're coming to the end of the 180th verse. So I thought we'd just summarize it so that we get have a bit of a recap. The chapter entitled "The Lord Accepts Prasadam," and hence we have a feast this evening, at the house of Sarvabhuma Bhattacharya. Now, accepting prasadam at the house of Sarvabhuma Bhattacharya. Sarvabhuma Bhattacharya and Mataji, I forget the name of his consort. Advaita Acharya and Sita Thakurani, Sarvabhuma Bhattacharya and Swasti S. Something S. The consort of Sarvabhuma Bhattacharya. She is a profound cook. Just like in Navadvip, you've got Sita Thakurani and Advaita Acharya. So in Puri, you have Sarvabhuma Bhattacharya. Sarvabhuma Bhattacharya, when Mahaprabhu appeared in Puri and spent that time, Sarvabhuma was in his late 70s, 79. Mahaprabhu, a young sannyasi. So I've always tend to think that the Lord Advaita of Jagannath Puri is like Sarvabhuma Bhattacharya. And so the Lord accepts prasadam on a regular basis there. And here an entire chapter has been dedicated. The following summary of this chapter is given by none other than, naturally, Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his Amrita Prabha Bhasya. After the Rath Yatra festival, Sri Advaita Acharya Prabhu worshipped Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with flowers and tulsi. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in return, worshipped Advaita Acharya with the flowers and tulsi that remained on the offered plate and said a mantra. Quite a unique mantra. Yosi, namostute. Yosi, namostute. Sweet. Sweet and short and sweet. Whatever you are, but I offer my respects unto you. Then Advaita Acharya Prabhu invited Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for prasadam. When Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his devotees performed the Nandutsav ceremony, the Lord dressed himself as a cowherd boy. Thus, the ceremony was very jubilant. Then the Lord and his devotees observed Vijay Dasami. The day of victory. So the day of victory is upon us. Lord Ramchandra conquered Lanka. So there was a suggestion that our lake, you know, the island on the lake is Lanka, and we could burn it. Tomorrow's ideas of celebrating the burning of Lord Ram. But just do pray that the rain stops, because the fields are getting softer. And if the fields are getting softer, then we may have to cancel the Utsav, because the parking isn't there. So Lord Ramchandra and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in the ecstasy of Hanuman, manifested various transcendentally blissful activities. Thereafter, the Lord and his devotees observed various other ceremonies. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then asked all the devotees to return to Bengal. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sent Nityananda Prabhu to Bengal for preaching, and also sent Ramdas, Gadadhar Das, and several other devotees with him. Then Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, with great humility, sent some Jagannath Prasadam and a cloth from Lord Jagannath to his mother through Shrivas Thakur. He's always conscious of mum. When the Lord bade farewell to Raghava Pandit, Vasudev Dutta, the residents of Kulinagram, and other devotees, he praised them for their transcendental qualities. Ramananda Vasu and Satyaraj Khan asked some questions, and the Lord, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, instructed them that all householder devotees must engage themselves in the service of Vaishnavas, exclusively devoted to chanting the holy name of the Lord. He also instructed the Vaishnavas from Khanda, as well as Sarvabhum Bhattacharya and Vidya Vakaspati. He praised Murari Gupta for his firm faith in the lotus feet of Lord Ramchandra. Considering the humble prayer of Vasudev Dutta, he established that Lord Sri Krishna is qualified to deliver all the conditioned souls. Thereafter, when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was accepting prasadam at the house of Sarvabhum Bhattacharya, Sarvabhuma's son-in-law Amog created trouble in the family with his criticisms. The following morning, he was attacked by the disease Kishuchika. Kishuchika is cholera. I can never pronounce cholera. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda ki jai, Shri Shri Sitaram Lakshmanuman ki jai, Gonitaya Bhagwan ki jai, Jagat Guru Shila Prabhupada ki jai. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very kindly saved him from death and enlivened him in chanting the holy name of Lord Sri Krishna. And thus the summary ends. And this was the summary given to us at the very beginning of the chapter. And of course, the 10th canto has 90 chapters. The entire Bhagavatam has 335 chapters, of which the 10th canto has 90, substantial. And this 87th chapter, 14th verse, is the same verse of ours here. And it's a very sweet, sweet conversation between the Smritis, the Puranas, the Vedas, and Sri Krishna. Now, according to Srila Jiva Goswami, 28 verses of the prayers of the personified Vedas, because the personified Vedas give their prayers, and these are texts 14 to 41, represent the opinions of each of the 28 major Shrutis. These Shrutis kind of personified. These chief Upanishads and other Shrutis concern themselves with various approaches to the absolute truth. And among them, those Shrutis are supreme, which emphasize pure, unalloyed devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Upanishads direct our attention to the Supreme Personality of Godhead by first negating what is distinct from Him and then defining some of His important characteristics. This is the purport of this verse in the 10th canto. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur interprets the first words of this prayer, Jaya Jaya, to mean, please reveal your super excellence. The word Jaya is repeated out of either reverence or joy, naturally joy, victory as well. And it's a victorious time, isn't it? How should I reveal my excellence? The Lord might ask. The Shrutis answer by requesting Him to mercifully destroy the ignorance of all living beings and attract them to His lotus feet. Beautiful answer, isn't it? The Lord says, but Maya, who imposes ignorance on the jivas, is full of good qualities. Gribita gunam. Important words in this verse. Gribita gunam. Why should I oppose her? Interesting conversation. Yes, the Vedas answer. But she has taken on the three modes of material nature to bewilder the conditioned souls and make them falsely identify with their material bodies. Such a heavy occupation she has chosen. So the purport, dear Prabhus, goes on. It's an elaborate purport. And if you can, and if you have a little time today, do go through it. It's, again, the 10th canto, 87th chapter, verse 14. It's a very sweet conversation between, you know, the Lord and the Shrutis and the personified Vedas. They're the Vedas. And the beginning, it begins with, you know, Sri Shrutaya Uvach. The purport of this 10th canto and all the purports have been provided to us by His Holiness Hridayananda Maharaj, Hridayananda Das Goswami, and the team back in the late 80s, I would imagine. And Maharaj at that time was the project director, the translator, the commentator, and the editor-in-chief. And he had also our very own Gopi Paranandan Prabhu, was the translator, commentator, and the Sanskrit editor. And a Dravida Prabhu, Brahmachari, Dravida Prabhu, was the English editor. So they had a whole team. And hence the 10th canto, many of the verses have elaborate purports. And of course, the most important part, I would say, to me, of the purport of what Srila Prabhupada has provided, relatively short, to this translation, and the words which are quite striking in the translation as well as the purport itself, is fear. Fear is such a bewildering phenomenon. It's mentioned in this purport, due to nescience, they accept all kinds of faulty things, thus provoking a fearful situation. The conditioned soul is full of fear. In the purport, Prabhupada mentions the three modes of material nature keep the living entity in a constant state of fear. Bhayam, bhayam. That word itself is quite heavy, fearful. Bhayam dviti ya binavesha sattata. The conditioned soul is always fearful due to being controlled by the external energy. In recent times, I was thinking, why am I always constantly in fear? I'm in fear of letting others down. I'm in fear of letting the devotees down. I'm in fear of letting my family down. I'm in fear of offending the devotees. And the older I seem to get, the more fearful I seem to get. The more insecure I seem to get. Will it continue, this fear? I mean, I'm relatively in a young body, Tattvavit Prabhu. You may not think so. But I think I'm still in a young body. But when will this fear cease? For it's so acute within me. The insecurities are so very apparent. And in recent months, it's dawned upon me that the only solace and the only hope I have is to acutely chant the Maha Mantra. For the Maha Mantra is the only companion. The devotees are there, no doubt. And the other hope, there's the Maha Mantra and the hope of the Vaishnava devotees being merciful. So the only hope is the constant association of the devotees in eradicating these insecurities and this fearful condition. And of course, acutely chanting the Maha Mantra when fear manifests. And fear manifests within me 24/7. So how then to chant the Maha Mantra 24/7? It's beyond me. In recent times, I've attempted to chant more than 16 rounds and read a little less. But after the chanting of those prescribed, so-called chanting of the prescribed rounds, I put the bead bag away and possibly the clicker and put it away. And the mantra does go on and on a bit, but then it fades away because I'd somewhat forget about it. And then the fears come up again until the fears become somewhat acute. Oh, have I upset this person? Why did I do that? And then the chanting kind of resumes. But for me, I'm in a neophyte situation, a novice when it comes to chanting. Even though several decades have passed since the chanting began. But I've come to that understanding that the only way of eradicating this fear, bhayam, is to chant acutely and to receive the association mercy of the Vaishnavas who are chanting. And then, of course, you somewhat dwell upon the pastimes of the Lord where there is an element of fear there. There is transcendental fear, isn't it? When Mother Yashoda is in fear of something happening to her Kana, she's constantly thinking. She's doing all sorts of rituals and pujas to protect her son. She's even saying to Lord Balaram on a daily basis, you're going to go out, make sure you protect your younger brother. And if anything happens, just bring him back. She's always on a daily basis. She's constantly attached, acutely attached to Srimati Radharani. And she makes the arrangement of Radharani coming to Nandagaon on a daily basis to cook for Krishna. Why? Because it's the prasad, it's the bhoga which she cooks protects Krishna because of her benediction from Durvasa Muni. The whole of Braj is aware that if Krishna has her cooking, he's protected. This is the fear of Mother Yashoda. So she's making this arrangement on a daily basis, and she is so exceptionally attached to Srimati Radharani, and she's thinking, when is she going to become my daughter-in-law? On one occasion, if not many, she takes the beautiful pinkish palms of Srimati Radharani. Srimati Radharani has beautiful pinkish palms. And she takes them, mother takes them, and she then takes a whole tray of haldi, turmeric, puts some water and makes a paste. And Radharani's thinking, what is mom doing? I'm busy trying to cook for the Lord, and she stops me and she's doing, because she's so fearful that one day Radharani will cease to come here. So she takes her palms and she takes this haldi, this turmeric, and she just pastes her palms. Her pinkish palms become yellow. And she just holds her palms until the haldi dries. And then she says to Srimati Radharani, because Radharani at that age is somewhat oblivious what this particular ritual is all about. And she says to her, you do understand what this means. And Radharani says, well, pray explain. Please explain. She says, well, now you're my daughter-in-law. No one can take me away from you. We cannot be separated. Radharani says, well, ooh, I'm married? She then on that particular day is released. Somehow the cooking manifests and Krishna is fed. Radharani then goes to the nearby kund and she says, she's thinking, well, before I go back home, I'd better wash my hands because the paste of haldi is there. And she then washes her hands. And as she washes, the water turns into yellow. It's like golden color. And she then goes off, washed her hands and palms have become pinkish. And then, of course, Krishna appears there. And he then looks at his reflection in the water. And he's quite astounded because his dark sham complexion has become golden. Gauranga Mahaprabhu, he's got a turban on. And on that turban, he has a peacock feather. But this is Gauranga Mahaprabhu, his reflection. So Mahaprabhu is manifested there by the Lord. But Mother Yashoda's transcendental fears are always there in protecting her young son. And whenever Krishna battles with an asura, you know, she's literally in tears and she faints and does all sorts of things. This is transcendental fear, which is truly unique. Nothing at all like the fear which I go through, which is completely and utterly conditioned and mundane. The insecurities do continue. Of course, dear devotees, time is ticking and wanted to mention something about the three acharyas. The Tithi of the Samadhi is today. And firstly, we have, now I've got this little notebook of mine. Satyaraj Prabhu had written the book on the six Goswamis, and it came out in 1991. So I think in 1993, I rushed off to Clapham High Street. I was there doing Sankirtan, and I bought this book for £1.75. it's of good quality, because these days, you know, everything falls apart. But then I wrote some notes, and I wanted to quickly go through them. And this is an ink pen, which seldom used these days. And it's kept, the ink is kept after all these years. Of course, we do have ink for the registrars, which is meant to keep for 300 years. But I'm a bit doubtful when I do these civil marriages, and it's meant to keep. But Gopal Bhatta Goswami, he appeared in 1505 and took Samadhi in 1579. So he was here with us for 74 years. Who has crossed 74? Priyojan, you're more than 74. Wow. But you go up and down those stairs like a young lad. Gopal Bhatta Goswami, very little is known of him. Sorry, Raghunath Bhatta. I keep saying Gopal Bhatta. Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, little is known of him. And the Bhatta Goswami wrote very little. The other Goswamis wrote, as we know. Jiva Goswami is, you know, so many writings. Rupa Sanatan. Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, very little has been written. And really, he's famous because of his father, in one sense, Tapan Mishra. Tapan Mishra is the father of Raghunath Bhatta Goswami. And Tapan Mishra had invited Lord Chaitanya to take lunch on a daily basis. Again, prasadam. So everything, you know, all this is, if you look at the CC, you know, it's all about prasadam. It's all about taking, you know, feasts upon feasts. In Tirupati Balaji, ISKCON temple there, you know, Mataji, I'm sure you're cooking profusely and feeding all the devotees, because, you know, we are a kitchen religion. So on a daily basis, the Lord would take prasad at Tapan Mishra's Prabhu. And for two consecutive months, Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, at a tender young age, a young teenager, he was a teenager, menially serves Mahaprabhu, massaging his feet on a daily basis. Such opportunity was given to the young lad. And a menial servant, and so that's when he received. He was, it's mentioned that he was the first of the six Goswamis to meet Mahaprabhu at the house, at his father's house. And he was heartbroken when Mahaprabhu left, because naturally Mahaprabhu has to leave. He's a sannyasi as well. He has to leave. So the young Raghunath Bhatta was heartbroken. And when eventually the Lord returns to Puri, he waits and waits. And when he arrives in Jagannath Puri, the young Goswami immediately goes to Puri and he falls at the feet of the Lord. And for 8 months, Mahaprabhu instructs Raghunath Bhatta Goswami on a daily basis. And he then instructs the young Goswami, return back to Benares, return back to your mom and dad and serve them. Serve them because you're the only son. There are no others to serve. So the young Goswami goes back to Benares, his house, his family home. And for 4 years, he serves Tapan Mishra and mom, both. Eventually, they take Samadhi. And after the parents have left, the Goswami then decides to go back to Puri. And he then joins Mahaprabhu once again. And again, for 8 months, interesting, why 8 months, Mahaprabhu instructs him continuously on a daily basis. After 8 months, Mahaprabhu instructs him, you now go to Vrindavan because there's work to do there. You join Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, and you serve under them. And these are my instructions. So then he then leaves Puri and makes his journey to Vrindavan. So he was with us here for 74 years. And then we have Das Goswami. Das Goswami, much information, a lot of information has been given. He appeared in 1495 and he took Samadhi in 1571, which means that he was here on the planet for around 76 years. And he was the first Goswami to meet Lord Chaitanya. And he's born in a place called Krishnapur. And of course, he's the son of affluent personalities, Govardhan Mujumdar, Zamindars, who is the younger brother of Hiranya Mujumdar. Powerful personalities. And the Hussein Shah, Nawab Hussein Shah, who was the emperor, least Saptagram and the neighboring villages to the two brothers. The area was leased by the Nawab. And so that lease, the payment for that lease was 1.2 million rupees per annum. Now that's a heck of a lot of Lakshmi. It's like billions and billions of pounds currently. It's mentioned that the annual income was 2 million gold coins of the family. And of course, eventually that's all been taken away as well at one point. But wonderful pastime is being given to us, a lot of information. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's constantly pleased with Das Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami. Of course, Das Goswami receives the mercy of Lord Nityananda, and that was just recently, I believe, in the previous chapter. Chapter 14 is the pastime of Panihati, and we went through that, and that's when Raghunath Das Goswami receives the mercy of Lord Nityananda. And hence he then joins Mahaprabhu's ISKCON movement. He's joined because of that mercy which has been received. Being pleased with Das Goswami, Mahaprabhu awarded him by giving him a small stone. Now, this is no ordinary stone. It is a stone from Govardhan Hill. And Mahaprabhu also gave him a garland which Mahaprabhu had kept for 3 long years. And the stone which was kept by Mahaprabhu for 3 years, these gifts were awarded to Das Goswami because Mahaprabhu was so very pleased with him, exceptionally pleased. And Das Goswami, in his latter years, his routine was quite unique. For 22 hours were spent on chanting. Now I was considering, could I ever spend 22 hours in chanting in this useless body of mine, well, useless mind? You know, it would be impossible. After 2-3 hours, I'd fall asleep. I may wake up again, but then I'd fall asleep again. But the Goswamis were so conditioned, personalities were no conditioning at all. For 22 hours, he would chant. For 1.5 hours, he would eat and possibly sleep just for 90 minutes of the day. Remarkable. He would somehow on a daily basis offer 2,000 devotees obeisances. Now, you know, to offer obeisances to two devotees on a daily basis is difficult. 2,000 devotees offering obeisances, you know. He would offer 1,000 obeisances to the lordships on a daily basis. That's like 3,000 obeisances on a daily basis. This was his, you know, daily routine. 100,000 names of the Lord chanted. And these austerities, as he became older and older, became more and more acute, to the point when towards the end of his existence, he was not even sleeping, nor was he eating. Now, I would have thought that, you know, austerities become harder when you get older. I find that. At a younger body, you know, you can actually do a bit more austerity. But of course, when you're younger, when the body is younger, I was thinking, when I get older, I'll do more austerity. But the body, conditioned as I am, the performance of austerity, when it's getting older, is even more blinking difficult. But here, the Goswamis, because they have the transcendental bodies. So his dwelling towards the end was the place in Radhakund. Incidentally, this shila, or this stone from Govardhan, is actually at Radhagokulananda temple in Vrindavan. That we have to mention, Radhagokulananda. Of course, that temple really belongs to us here at Bhaktivedanta Manor, because we have Gokulananda here. The Gokulananda there are simply, you know, expansions of here. But that shila is placed there and worshipped there. So if you do go to Vrindavan and you happen to take darshan there, remember there's a shila there from Das Goswami's time. And so because of his acute austerities, Raghunath Das Goswami became known as the very emblem of renunciation. The very emblem of renunciation. And hence the title of Das Goswami had been given to him. So these are the short pastimes we've just gone through of the two Goswamis. And then, of course, we have our very dear Sri Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. Sri Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami appeared in 1496, 400 years prior to our founder, Acharya Srila Prabhupada. He appeared on 1496 and took samadhi on the 15th of October, 1588, at the advanced age of 92, naturally in Vrindavan. Now, what's interesting is that it's mentioned that when he's compiling the Chaitanya Charitamrita, he's 90 plus, 91 possibly. And so one can say that after the compilation of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Kaviraj Goswami would have taken samadhi. His appearance was in Bengal, at a place called Jamatpur, and naturally he takes samadhi in Vrindavan, because just prior to him appearing in Vrindavan at an elderly age, in his coming up to 90, when he's in Bengal, Nadia, Lord Nityananda comes to him in a dream. And he says, the Lord says, you have to go to Vrindavan. Make your journey to Vrindavan and compile the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Mahaprabhu himself will enable you to do that. So Lord Nityananda came to him in a dream, and hence the very next day, somehow, Kaviraj Goswami makes that journey. And he then enters Vrindavan and he then begins to somehow compile the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And periodically, you know, he mentions in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, I don't really know how I'm doing this. I don't know how I'm writing. You know, the acute humility of Kaviraj Goswami is truly manifested when in such an incredibly humble manner he compiles these verses. And continuously he mentions that. And he gives all the credit, literally, to Vrindavan Das Thakur, that he's done the actual work of, you know, compiling the Chaitanya Mangal, the Chaitanya Bhagwat. The Chaitanya Mangal then becomes the Chaitanya Bhagwat of Vrindavan Das Thakur. What I'm just doing is I'm just, you know, filling in the gaps. Literally, he says, I'm just filling in the gaps. And of course, he compiles, you know, over 11,500 verses are there in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So such are the unique pastimes and the teachings which we can learn from these three remarkable, remarkable personalities. And it's their Tirobhav Tithi today. So, dear devotees, I just wanted to conclude in sharing with you all a unique prasadam pastime which I'm dying to share with you, because in recent times we've had a lot of association with Indrajumna Maharaj. Indrajumna Maharaj is an incredible personality within our movement, an incredible acharya of ours. And I was very fortunate enough just a few weeks back to sit with him taking prasadam, and I thought, okay, I've got to tie in with this, because you know this entire chapter is about prasadam. And I'm just observing Maharaj taking prasad, and I said to him, Maharaj, please tell us anything about your adventures, because he's our adventure acharya. He's had so many unique adventures. And then he says, oh yes, well, prasadam, unique thing happened. And he was, Maharaj was with Bibi Govinda Maharaj and also Sri Prahlad. They were together. And they were in some Islamic country. I can't remember what he said. You know, Uzbekistan or Kazakhstan or somewhere. Some stan. And they were in the village of this stan. And, Islamic simple villages. And they happened to be there. And they were... They went for a wedding. It was a Muslim wedding. It was 1,000 people there, villagers. And they called themselves Muslim priests, Mohammedan priests from India, in saffron robes. And of course, because the villagers there were simple villagers, they accepted that they were Musliman, priests from India. So they gave them a lot of respect. And so they requested Maharaj that, can you speak something? Speak. And of course, it would be translated. And so Maharaj says, well, what we could do is we could sing at for the wedding. We could sing for the couple. So of course, they sang. And I kid you not, Prabhus, they sang for 2 hours. And Maharaj taught everyone present there the Swami step. So they're all doing all of this business. And they're singing the Maha Mantra. And of course, they're wondering that, is this some Islamic prayer? Yes, yes, it's a Mohammedan prayer. We, Mohammedan from India, sing this all the time. We were Mohammedans. And of course, after 2 long hours of kirtan, and if you can imagine, Sri Prahlad Prabhu singing, I mean, it's, you know, it's quite unique. Everyone, anyone, absolutely anyone can be captivated when Sri Prahlad Prabhu sings, isn't it? When I sing, absolutely no one's captivated. But when he sings, even the, 1,000 Mohammedans are captivated. And of course, the kirtan does come to an end because, you know, the devotees present there are pretty much exhausted. And then, of course, because they've you know, attended the wedding, there has to be a prasadam feast. There has to be a feast. Because you can't have a wedding without prasadam. And, of course, these delicacies turn up. Kosher. The delicacies turn up. And when Maharaj, the two swamis of ours, Bibi Govinda Maharaj and Indrajit, when they see the delicacies, oh, we are fasting. Very cleverly. We are observing Ramadan. We are fasting, we are observing Ramadan, we cannot eat. And of course, you know, they're simple village folk. But they questioned, Ramadan now? It is not time for Ramadan. Oh, but in India it is Ramadan. In India we are observing Ramadan. So, fair enough, Ramadan. So they then brought dates and fruits and, you know, nice delicacies of fruits and dates. And they, so the devotees honored that. And as they're about to, they've honored the nuts and dates and bitter fruits, and as they're about to leave, they say, no, 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 you can't leave. There's another wedding tomorrow. You have to stay. Of course, Maharaj said, no, no, we cannot stay. We have to go back to India because our duties are there. So, of course, they left. And of course, I had to, you know, share that wonderful pastime. There's also another pastime which he told us, but we won't go into that, time not permitting. But this is very much linked to the Russians. The Russians and Indrajumna Maharaj. There's a leela going on. But I won't mention this pastime. Grantharaj, Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Ki. We literally have about 5 minutes for questions, comments, corrections. Questions, I'll leave that to the senior devotees. Any comments, corrections, gladly accepted. Anything at all. Sorry, Prabhu. You want to hear that pastime? Are you serious? 5 minutes, that quick pastime. Maharaj had a servant, a secretary, a brahmachari by the name of Kartikeya. Maharaj initiated him, Kartikeya. A Russian. Russian, and he was with the movement for a good nine odd years. But now and again, this brahmachari, Taruna Prabhu, would somewhat kind of disappear. And the devotees found that he even carried a firearm. You know, now and again he would have a pistol in his bag, and kind of unusual. And then he would, like, you know, he would go. And when he came back, he would just say to the devotees, and he would say to Maharaj that I had to go and see my family. And then all of a sudden, Kartikeya Prabhu disappeared for a much longer time. So Maharaj is thinking, where is this devotee? Where is this? He never got married. He was always in saffron, had a bitter hair. He would seemingly chant, well-read, versed in scripture, knew what he was talking about. But then he disappeared. And after a little while, he came back. He came back, and Maharaj said, where were you? And Kartikeya Prabhu, he said, I was never a devotee. I was never your disciple. I was pretending. I was a KGB spy. And all these years, I was investigating you. All these years, I had to make sure that you and your movement do not expand. because we have to have control over you. But now my investigation and my time with you has come to an end. I'm a devout Christian. I should continue with my faith. But what I was doing by seemingly practicing was I was investigating. And now my time has come to an end. I shall now leave.